So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Scotty Vortex! Scotty Vortex!
Thank you guys very much for everything.
He's single!
I am single. Ladies, anybody?
I'll talk to you later. We can go on a date.
All right. I started out watching CZW back in high school in my grandma's garage, watching Tournament of Death, praying to God that I could get here one day.
Hold to your mouth.
So, thank you, DJ, for giving me a chance. Thank you, Drake, for could have done it without you, brother. You've been here by my side. Thank you, Mike Burns. Thank you, all of you guys. Thank you.
Is rolling.
That's fine. Don't worry.
If it's not interesting, I won't keep it.
Every show we played was like, you know, 2,000 plus seats. All the venues had a podcast booked in around that. Like, podcasts are filling 2,000, 3,000 seat venues.
Oh, yeah. There's a podcast fest coming here in November.
Really?
It's like a 3-day deal.
Have you been invited?
No. No, I won't be here, actually, I don't think. See, I think it's Survivor Series weekend, actually.
This is like, to me, punk and metal all over again. Like, punk and metal are never regarded by the Canadian music industry in the 90s, right? You had bands like Propaganda selling hundreds of thousands of records, touring internationally, and they were completely ignored by the mainstream music industry. Much like here is Live Audio Wrestling, one of the most popular podcasts in the sports realm, if not all podcast realm, and they're not inviting you.
No, people still spell my name wrong. It's we're not at that level, Damien, let's be honest. Though you must get Damien misspelled all the time.
I'm corresponding with a producer at the CBC, and I've written back and wrote my name in the body of the email, I don't know, 36 times now. Yeah. And every single time it's I-E-N. I don't know if it's an autocorrect on his thing. I want to tell him, but now I'm just kind of enjoying it.
Oh, it drives me nuts.
Really?
It's a total ego thing. I've realized, like, I don't get bent out of shape over much. My name, I find I do.
Remember when my phone autocorrected when I texted you that time? And I quickly fixed it, and you're like, thank you. You're like, just like
I don't recall.
I'm mad. I'm like, John, it's John, I know it's John.
iPhones get a pass because I'm brutal. Autocorrect is brutal for me. I'll read something back, and it's just like, this doesn't make any sense.
Now, I've turned off my phone and thrown it away, John, but I wanted to go through the text message exchange about today's event, but I'll find that later on when we get to that point. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful.
I'm taking over the show.
No, you might have taken your popularity that we bestowed upon you in the wrestling world, and now you're leeching off the listeners with your own show. But here you are in my territory.
I'm not even going to bring up my other show, John. And that's
it's like me being on a fucked up stage and saying, let me get the vocal cords going here.
Hey, if you want to jump on stage with Fucked Up at any time and sing a song, John, I will let you. I will extend it. You and me will train together.
It would be silence. They would be mad. They would know. My name would be Who.
And also, but the thing with my wrestling podcast is just because every time I came in here and suggested a cool indie musician for you guys to have on for a guest review, it went ignored.
Okay.
So I had to give him a forum.
The show has begun, and this is always my favorite part because this we find out the true listeners who are going to stick with this. There's a review coming at some point. Yeah. I was listening to one of your shows recently because you know which guest was a draw for yours truly that I wanted to hear?
Who?
Not a name you're going to think.
I'm really excited now. Who is it?
Greg Benedetto.
Greg? Oh, of course. But that's not on my wrestling podcast. That's on my real podcast.
Oh, boy. A real podcast.
Well, no, because my wrestling podcast, I live in the shadow of the law. If you listen to my wrestling podcast, John, I constantly talk about you. It's almost like that game record where he constantly talks about Dr. Dre, even though Dr. Dre doesn't.
You are very kind.
Any of the records on it? I talk about you and Way all the time. I live in your shadows. But on my other podcast, I did have your former classmate.
Greg Benedetto. I didn't know if you knew the connection or not.
Oh, yes. We've talked about it. I think we've talked about it before. If not, I've talked about it with Way before. But yeah, Greg, and did you go to his fest? Did you go to any of the events this
week? No, I did not.
He does a big, huge music fest, plays in a very popular band called Shit. He is truly a renaissance man.
Yeah, I mean, he was at your show that me and Wei went to a year ago.
Yep. Was that a year ago?
I want to say it was a year ago.
Wow, it does.
Where you played at...
Rivoli?
Rivoli, yes.
That would have been like 2 years ago.
Was that 2 years ago?
John, you've got a missing year because we were talking about someone off air that had two seasons on a TV show.
Oh, we were talking about George Strombolopoulos and how many seasons he hosted Hockey Night in Canada. I thought it was one, but it was two.
It was two. So you must have a missing year in there.
2015, I guess. It was just
blew
came
by.
And went. Yeah, in my mind. Maybe I slept through it.
Well.
My critics who listen would say, yeah, you're always asleep at the wheel.
Well, and I'm not one of those critics, John, because I will never say that. But I will say that if you want to go back and find out how your 2015 was, you have one of the most documented day-to-days
I know.
Of anyone I know.
Yeah, my life is kind of documented.
Very documented. It's like my children on my wife's Instagram. Like, it's every day there's something.
Imagine that when your kids are older and they go back and they can just watch. I mean, instead of photo albums, it's going to be Instagram.
Yeah. I think it's also weird to think that, you know, like, you know, at one point it was like to keep your children away from the computer. You have to keep them away. Like, but now as an adult – and I know you as an adult, you have to rely on your social media quote footprint. It sounds so disgusting to say it, but like.
Oh, I do not rely on it. But believe
you do,
me, Damien.
You do rely on it, John. Every time we promote a podcast, every time you reach out there.
I know.
And like even when you look for a job now, they check your Facebook. They want to see about.
Oh, that's the background check.
Yeah,
of course.
And normal job.
I know websites that have hired people and they have gone like ridiculously back on just any dumb posting, everything.
Yeah.
And this is like media, just to cover their tracks and make sure there's not going to be something that pops up. I mean, mm-hmm. that is – and on the other side of things, I mean, look at that tool that Donald Trump has done the – I don't want to talk about Donald Trump on this show. I'm only bringing this up for our topic, but how
– And to tease Review America.
Yes, where Brian Mann and Nate Milton will talk about it.
I'm waiting with
properly.
My fingers crossed for the next one.
Well, I know they're doing one on election night.
Okay.
So I don't know if they'll be doing one, the penultimate edition before election night or not.
I hope they do. I love that. I love the music. Dun, dun, dun,
I know.
Dun. It's such, that's one of my favorite.
That show was made for Brian.
It was made for, it's made for the two of them. I think the balance of the opinions, like obviously both are in the realm that I ascribe to, but like I just think the way it's done as a podcast, I love the format.
I think those two are great together, mm-hmm. and I'm going to readily pat myself on the back because
matchmaker.
When we were done Review and Impact, and I was figuring out who can Nate do this show with, I had one person in mind, and then it was like, well, we have this other loose part and Brian Mann. I should put those two had never talked to each other before.
That's right, they were never on a show.
And I suggested, why don't you two do this show? And their chemistry is fantastic.
Absolutely, yeah.
I feel.
Who was that person?
Nate doesn't have bad chemistry with anyone.
Was it me, John? Was I the one that you passed over for Brian Mann?
No, okay, I knew okay. You would not have dedicated yourself to Impact.
What, to
every
be
week.
On a main franchise and not just be a hopeful
oh,
guest
please.
Every 5 to 6 months?
We have had those discussions in the past, Damien. We have had them. I believe the door has been open and,
someone
shunned us.
Yeah, one time.
It's your legal representative.
Yeah, my legal representative. Getting me all kinds of trouble now. Oh. No, I was going to say, though, Review America has filled a void left in my podcast schedule ever since that you, Wei, and myself killed Talking Sheets.
What happened here? They went on a hiatus, did they not?
They went on a hiatus after I – broke the fourth wall and disrupted the time continuum and mentioned the Wrestling Review podcast on a wrestling review and thus created a time paradox where they brought up.
So is your hope now that by bringing it up, you're going to reverse the damage you did your last appearance?
Well, or make Review America post an episode every week. One of the two. I just need something to fill that void.
Yes. I don't know what Brian and Nate's plans are beyond this election. I feel usually the election is 90% of the population doesn't care about politics anymore until the next cycle. I feel there's going to be a trickle down after this.
Yep.
That there's going to be a lot of focus on the immediate aftermath and the transition.
Review a decline of the American Empire.
Yes.
The new one.
Are you following the political race?
As much as you can without letting it consume you. Like, I think I follow it. I'm not one of those people that's, you know, live tweeting it. But at the same time, I listen to my political wrestling podcast and I watch the debates and I...
Damien is not paid for.
No.
He has no super PAC behind him. The law super PAC.
This is honestly my entertainment. Like, this cuts into my podcast listening this week. You know, next, when this drops, I will go to download it and be fuck, I'm on this show. Can't download it.
Was there a better segment on any podcast this year than a mod psychoanalyzing Donald Trump?
That was awesome.
I was listening to this and I thought, this is the most incredible thing of all time.
Yeah, that was, I think, like, the fact that you know, like, much in a much more cooler way than Howard Stern did with his pack of listeners that have become part of the show, I think live audio wrestling has kind of done that too. You know, when you think
nurturing them from the ground up.
Yeah, and it's been like that since day one, right? Because, yeah, like, you know, like, Jason was a fan, you were a fan, Way was a fan. Everyone kind of got brought in, and now there's more people being brought in. So now we can have the Mod Butt cycle.
It's the true organic feel of what developmental is,
yep,
and bringing them up to the main roster.
Yep, that's right. And then you move on and you become the head of TSN or something.
Yeah, I guess so. Get scooped up.
Okay, well, get me in that system then, John, because I need to be head of TSN.
Well, maybe you can introduce me to your lawyer.
Trust me, you don't want that.
That'll be our last reference.
You do not want that.
Mr. Abraham.
Yes.
Do you want to discuss how we came to decide upon Tournament of Death 9?
Okay, why don't you – should you want to give your version of the way the events went, or should I give mine first?
I invited you,
yes,
to come on this esteemed show.
We're in agreement about that. I was flattered by the invitation.
As is policy, when we have a guest reviewer, we always let them pick the review.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, I'm down for anything.
Yes.
I said, cool, so am I.
And then you said, pick something. And I said, first, because I've been trying to do this one review several times that I've been on, and it's very rarely that I get on the show. So it's been a couple years that I've been trying to do this. But this Robbie Brookside BBC documentary,
yep,
the wrestling diary of Robbie Brookside that I love. It's a light, fun-hearted watch. And then just to force John to pick that as my second choice, I picked one of the most disgusting pay-per-views I could think of that has ever taken place.
You had no intention of watching the latter?
Well, I kind of thought, like,
you know, I thought you were serious about it. Well, and the only reason I opted that way, which I almost immediately regretted, was because you had gone to Tournament of Death and you said, I have a lot of great road stories.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, our audience has heard many of your Robbie Brookside stories and not your Tournament of Death stories. And I thought, sure, why not? By the time I met Abdullah Kobayashi.
Holy God.
Like, we're going to get into this. This was...
it's insane.
This was the most unpleasant viewing in my entire life when it comes to professional wrestling. I saw things on this show that will never be fully outside of my brain.
Yeah.
Much like Abdullah Kobayashi would not have a certain object ever out of his brain. There was... I was begging for Robbie Brookside at a certain point in this show.
Well, that's what I figured, because I figured I'd come on the show, I could talk about going down the TOD and making this documentary in addition to talking about Robbie Brookside and bringing up the fact that I've had him on my podcast and I met him before, as John loves me and when I bring it up. And I thought, why don't I just pick this TOT event? Because there's no way John's going to want to review a Tournament of Death.
Why didn't you just pick Robbie Brookside? I left the door open
because
for you to pick anything.
Last time I picked Robbie Brookside, you're like, oh, let's do this WCW show instead.
Well, it's a combination of the widest array of interest that a show is going
exactly
to have.
Well, and
we will do Robbie Brookside, okay? I promise you we will do the Robbie Brookside documentary.
Well, and also, John.
And not without you either.
If you did it without me, actually, if you did it without me, I'd be kind of stoked because I could listen to it and enjoy it. But if you did it without me, I'd also come here with a Kenzan.
You would never come back here, probably.
I'd come here with two Kenzans in one hand,
yeah,
in each hand, and look for John and Way. I don't want to tease my podcast, but this week on my podcast, I have a wrestling story that I have to tell you about. You know MVP, the wrestler?
I know him.
You know, he went to prison for a while because of an armed robbery. He's talked,
yes,
about this a lot. Before he went to prison for an armed robbery, his mom shipped him out to Texas. to try and get out of trouble with the gangs that he was in and all this kind of stuff. When he was in Texas, he was just tagging out a park outside of this – in a suburb in Dallas, and he saw these four random metalhead, thrash metalhead kids show up. And so he walks up to him. He rolls up on him. First, he's got bad intentions, he says, but then he notices they're wearing punk and metal shirts, and he had just gotten into punk and metal himself back home. So he started talking to these kids. It turns out one of them is Zach Blair from the band Gwar and Rise Against. So anyway, there's this whole crazy story they go into.
I thought you were going to say one of them was Robbie Brookside.
No, it'd be amazing. That would really blow my mind.
I thought you were going to tie this all together.
But John, that's just the start of the story. So then they fall out of touch. They reconnect years later after MVP's out of prison, but before he trains to become a wrestler. He meets Zach Blair, who's now playing in Gwar. Zach comes through Miami. He calls MVP. He's like, why don't you come out to the show? We're playing with the Misfits tonight in Miami. And so he's like, oh, that'd be amazing. Like, I love the Misfits. So MVP goes in, walks backstage. What does he see on one side of the room? All the Misfits with Gorgeous George. And then a bunch of police officers and security separating the person on the other side of the room, who is the Macho Man Randy Savage. And he has shown up because his ex-girlfriend George has run off with the Misfits and left him. And that's where the story
Wow.
It just gets nuttier.
Wow. So this is on your next show.
It's on the show that's already up this week. But I wanted to text you about this, and then I thought I was going to tell you about it before we went on air, but now I've worked in a really awkward plug.
No, not awkward at all.
Okay,
but if there's a payoff to the story.
I think you will like this Macho Man story.
And I will definitely listen
places.
To this.
It goes places. So, but anyway, so back to
CZW. So this year, when would this have been, like 2000?
It would have been 1999.
Okay, 99.
Yeah, like 98. When they just left. Because they remember they finished their run in WCW.
Correct.
And then that's when George ran off, and Jerry only had his run-in with Dr. Death Steve Williams, which
yes.
did not go very well.
No.
And Macho Man was none too pleased.
What a weird world. Is that kind of the pinnacle of your tie-in with the Misfits being part of WCW?
I think that is a pinnacle of my tie-in, but the fact that we think about that WCW locker room, and in that locker room, you've got Kevin Sullivan, who went to punk shows. You know, you have Bob Mould, who's in arguably one of the greatest punk hardcore bands ever, Husker Du.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Misfits, and you also have Robbie Brookside, who, you know, is a punk wrestling god.
Just imagine a 16-year-old Damien Abraham.
I think I'm more worried about a 37-year-old Damien Abraham in that room, John. I think a 16-year-old Damien Abraham would know his place and shut up. I think me at this point would be punishing those people, and I would probably wind up running afoul of Dr. Death Steve Williams myself.
So we nearly had a miscommunication here because
yes.
you had suggested doing Tournament of Death 9.
Yeah. No, I suggested 8. Oh, no, I suggested 9.
You right. said 9.
Yeah, I said 9. You're right.
But you had meant 8.
I meant 8.
Because you identified one certain element to the 8th Tournament of Death. And as I'm watching this show, I am then realizing 40 minutes in that the show you meant was Tournament of Death 8.
Yeah.
To which I told you, I am already 40 minutes into this. I cannot scrap this 40 minutes and start on a new show. We are doing Tournament of Death 9. And you agreed that
yes,
that
I
was
did.
Okay.
I
so Tournament of Death 9 it was from June of 2010.
Yes. And it is a – I wanted 8 because 8 has the infamous moment where Nick Gage was in a – I think it's 200 light bulb tube death match.
I did see this clip.
And there are 3 or 2 that are the thin kind. And those, when they break, they don't shatter and go to, like, glass dust like the other kind do. They just break and become, like, little spears. And he got one and it punctured him through
oh, God.
The side and into his lung. And he had to be airlifted out.
You have gone to a live Tournament of Death. And before we get into this review, I am not going to just dump on this, okay? This is not my favorite form of professional wrestling. It's not what I enjoy out of professional wrestling. That said, I think there is an ability here. There is a skill set in being able to be a deathmatch wrestler that not just anyone can do. And I think that's a preconceived notion people have of these. And I fully admit there's an audience for this. And CZW proves this every year with their Tournament of Death. And CZW is not just death matches. It's kind of what a lot of their calling card is. But they do a lot of great wrestling mm-hmm. throughout the year. Now, you went to Tournament of Death this past June, correct?
Yeah, I went to this latest one, which is TOD 15.
And you were shooting a documentary on it.
I was shooting a documentary for Vice that's coming out next week. But it's I think going
– So you have a documentary on Tournament of Death coming out and you didn't want to reveal. Like, this, just for pure synergy, Damien, maybe I should be your lawyer, okay? Because I would advise you, both from a legal perspective and from just a pure logical standpoint, that this would be great promotion for your Tournament of Death documentary.
But, John, as a fellow self-marketer like myself, sometimes blood on top of blood on top of blood is too much blood. So I was hoping for blood on top of blood on top of Robbie Brookside.
Robbie Brookside, by the way, catch my documentary out next month.
Yeah, that would have been it. Would have been me just talking about Robbie Brookside and like, oh yeah, I went to the Tournament of Death and it was very, very, very intense. But I think that's the thing that shocked me too. You know, I've watched a couple death matches over the years. Obviously, we've reviewed a couple of them on here. But it is – it's very different. Like, people be like, oh, it's backyard wrestling. It's not at all like backyard wrestling. These are skilled wrestlers. To me
– correct.
This is almost like modern art. These guys could paint a different picture if they wanted to. In fact, many of them have gone on to paint on the biggest canvas of them all, the WWE, you know, like Dean Ambrose or Drake Younger is now a referee.
Mm-hmm.
Sami Callihan too. But you've got these people are choosing to paint in a style that is very abstract. And it just – it's different. It's like a different sort of thing. So to me, it's almost like abstract art.
Yes. To me, it's more the health concerns I have.
Yeah. They do have to have a lot of – I can
– I mean, there's no way to watch JC Bailey on this show
knowing
what would happen to him where he died at the end of the summer, 2 months after this. And brain trauma and concussions were cited. For that, I don't think you can divorce the two.
Yeah, no, I think watching some of the things that he does and gets done to him, it's because accidents can happen anywhere and anytime. I think the thing that I find amazing about this is like this entire ridiculous notion of real and fake that people always try and put on wrestling is rendered completely.
Obsolete.
Yeah, because it's like it's staged. Like it's these people are working together to create something, but at the same time, it is far more real than any fight I've ever been in. Thank God.
You're not gonna do this at a show, are you?
Holy jeez! Like I think going there and seeing it live.
You said you nearly vomited at a certain point.
There's a scene, and we will get to when we discuss it because it comes up in this thing too.
You and I are on the complete same page because we are both thinking of the exact same scene where my stomach turned and I had to turn this off for like 2 days before I could go back to it.
I think if we're thinking – that's the other thing is because you said there's a scene. When you get to it, you will know. Please don't watch this.
Oh, you have
kids.
A multiple choice?
That was the thing. There were so many scenes where I'm like,
to me, there is one that is just hands down.
And then that one comes. And you're like, oh, that's what he meant.
Yeah.
It is and Kobayashi can't wrestle either, right? He's done, I think, now too. I think he's not.
Well, he was diagnosed with like hepatitis C, I think, a year after this.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm not that familiar with Abdullah Kobayashi.
Because you actually have to have blood tests. Like I was, you know, with DJ Hyde making this documentary and he had to have every single wrestler that was competing there had to be blood tested. And in fact, he wanted one wrestler to make an appearance, but they couldn't clear a blood test. So they weren't even allowed to appear in the
right.
ring. Like mm-hmm. they were going to be in non-wrestling capacity.
Is there a commission in Delaware?
There is. And it's as a result of Tournament of Death, from what I understand, 8. And after the Nick Gage thing happened,
right.
The state stepped in and now there's a bunch of requirements and DJ, I think Tournament of
– that's kind of amazing that they meet those requirements when you see what is happening on these shows that a traditional – like a government agency is overseeing this.
Well, I think because it's being held on private property.
Right.
It's on his parents' farm. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that shocks me about this the most, I think, is that – you know, it's one thing if you see like an MMA fight where people are fighting – But you don't know what's going to come. Obviously, you're not using a weapon, and it's skilled martial artists, you know, exchanging blows. With this, it's the level of consent and the level of, you know, like all pro wrestling that these people are engaged in with each other to make sure that they don't die is shocking. Like you know what's going to happen to you. You planned this out, so you know at this moment you're going to get smashed with this thing. And it's going to really hurt. And you know exactly how much it's going to hurt because you've probably had it done to you before.
Who were some of the people you spoke to for the documentary beyond DJ Hyde?
Masada.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Cannonball, who has become like a – like that's the other thing is like, you know, you have an impression of what these people are going to be like. But then when you meet them and you're like, oh, wow, there's just like such a range of people drawn to this type of wrestling. And I guess you see that reflected in the audience. You know, it's not all, you know, like blood hungry freaks. Like, you know, there's definitely that contingent. There's wrestling fans. There's punk kids. There's hardcore kids. There's a couple juggalos. There's all – it's like a real weird cross section of a marginal humanity. That it's drawn to. And I'm a marginal humanity too, so I'm drawn to it as well.
And how long did this show go? I mean, this was like a 3-hour watch, but I mean, this was edited with breaks eliminated.
I think it was like 5 hours, mm-hmm. 4 hours. Like, you know, they would have – it flows pretty quick though. They run a pretty tight ship, and I guess they've been doing it for 15 years now, right? Like, so they, you know, they clear the ring. They make sure everything's gone right away. The setup the day before, it was just the three of us setting up everything.
Yeah.
Four of us setting up everything in the field.
Did you get a sense of like the mood of the crowd after they have watched all this and kind of just adjusting to just leaving this strange environment and going back to the regular world? Is there almost like I can't imagine sitting around for 5 hours and how you're taking this in. I mean, was it like any other normal wrestling show? Is this just normalized by a certain point?
Yeah, like I think it's like, you know how when you go to any wrestling company, you when you get there really early, which you do to do these interviews, you mm-hmm. know, and I do because, as I say, I'm a marginal person, you'll see the hardest hardcore of the people lined up of that, you know, like when you go to a Ring of Honor show, you see the Ring of Honor core audience in a city lined up first, and those people will fight and die for Ring of Honor. For CZW, I would say that's all the fan base. They don't really have a lot of casual fans. Like they probably do for some of the other shows where they have other types of indie wrestlers coming in. But for TOD,
I imagine there's a lot of people that travel to these shows.
Yeah. There's people from Japan that were there, people from Europe that were there, people from Canada, not just myself, you know, that are coming down to see it and stuff. So people like are traveling in. Mm-hmm. And people are elated afterwards. It's people are like, this is their event, you know? And especially the one I went to, because that, of course, was the return of Zandig.
Yes, who would be mentioned on this show,
but
would not appear.
Well, this show, it's funny because I want to do 8. This one's very significant, too, because 8 is where DJ Hyde came back into the fold. And I guess, according to DJ, Zandig had lost the venue. DJ moved it to his parents' farm, and Zandig said, one day you're going to run this company. And then 6 months later, he owned it. Mm-hmm. So this was the first one, I believe, that DJ Hyde actually was the sole owner of CZW for.
So let us embark on Tournament of Death 9 from Townsend, Delaware, at the Ultraviolent Underground. And as we said, this was the 9th Tournament of Death. The first one was in August of 2002. And it started with DJ Hyde coming out to preview the show, running through all of the participants and calling this audience the sickest motherfuckers he has ever seen. And he thanks his family who is in attendance. And we got DJ Hyde just saying on the mic to one of the fans that yelled out that they rule, my parents more than rule. Trust me, buddy.
It's funny, too, because the reaction he gets here is so different than what he gets now, where it's just the whole audience chanting, fuck you, DJ, as he walks to the ring. Like, here he's getting kind of like, you know, a mixed reaction. His parents still get a very positive reaction. When he thanked his parents, they got a big, thank you, DJ's parents, type chant. But DJ got a fuck you, DJ, and people give him the finger. Like, the whole time, you're just talking to fans. They just want Zandig, you know? But it's interesting to see the honeymoon period was still in full effect at TOD9.
And he sprayed champagne in the ring. And this was a week after the passing of Trent Acid from a drug overdose. And they did a 10-bell salute for Acid and were interrupted by Devin Moore, who came out. And first, he accepted the challenge to face Johnny Cashmere on the upcoming Acid Fest show that they were doing in his honor, and was friends with Trent Acid. So they did this 10-bell salute with Devin Moore out there, and then we got into the actual show. But that was, kind of what was going on at the time, the passing of Trent Acid, who had been very much a guy that had been deep into drug use and had been very much affiliated with Combat Zone amongst other promotions in the Northeast. So that had just happened a week prior.
I think it's also, like, you know, time-wise, times in with the sort of the rise of that epidemic of drugs in the northeast of the United States, where you had OxyContin, like the ravages of OxyContin and all these sort of prescription opiates that people were becoming addicted to. And I think obviously in something where you're getting in this much pain.
Yeah,
in
that that's part of the country. Definitely a bit of a byproduct of it. And the announcers are Salamander Jones and Jake Black.
I thought they were great.
Yeah, I thought they served the role well.
Yeah.
As the announcers, to call this level of matches where – I will say this. There's you look at this lineup and all of the different spots and violence that you'd say at some point it's just you're numb to all of this. Some of this stuff was just – it was so much. I never found it numbing. No. And neither did this crowd. Like I was just as if you are going to cringe in any of this, you're doing it throughout.
Yeah.
I found, at least.
Yeah, no, and I also find with like XPW and stuff like that, when you watch those, the commentators just get so grating. I thought these guys explained enough. They could call the moves, which I thought was great because there actually are moves involved.
Yep.
And yeah, like they never got grating because I think if they were like an air raid siren plus the violence, it would have been too much.
Yeah, the over-the-topness was kind of in the ring. You didn't need to enhance it with, over-the-top calls that, you're right, would have gotten jarring after a few hours.
Joey Styles light or something.
So our first match in the 8-man tournament was the late JC Bailey taking on Danny Havoc. And this was Bailey's 6th tournament, and he had reached the finals in 2006. That year won by Nick Gage, as we do some Tournament of Death history, Damian. And... yeah, as we mentioned, Bailey died shortly after this on August the 30th. Havoc had won the tournament in 2008, and we started this off. Bailey is part of a group called Cult Fiction with Billy Graham, who would be a big part of this show. Mm-hmm. And Cult Fiction would be all over this, and they were feuding with the other group, the Suicide Kings.
I loved Billy Graham as
he was a good promo. He had awesome. He was like this Alice Cooper looking. How would you describe him? Like a guy that was like this strung out manager who was a good promo.
Yeah, he looked like a slender man wearing a long black wig.
Yeah,
but that was his real hair. And he's a great promo and definitely for a cult leader, which is what he's meant to be, I guess, with Cult Fiction. He was creepy enough to carry it off.
And the story is that Graham was the only one who was there for Bailey when he was in jail. So now he has aligned himself with Cult Fiction. And Bailey brings light tubes to the ring. Havoc is wrestling with two pins in his foot from a recent surgery.
So Havoc also saw this year. He's still going in deathmatch.
Danny Havoc has been in so many of these. He would win a future one, too. I think 2013 he won. Immediately. We got into this with skull-on-skull headbutts, Damian. Totally unnecessary. And given the Bailey story, I really didn't like this.
Yeah.
It's very hard to watch. There was a code breaker delivered by Havoc, and then he's struggling to lift Bailey and then powerbombs him into the light tubes in the corner as the announcers proclaim that Tournament of Death has officially begun with the breaking of the light tubes, the first of maybe 500 light tubes breaking on this show. I might be conservative with that estimate.
There was a cloud of light bulb tube dust that sits above that ring.
Like, if they had a sponsor.
Oh, yeah. Band-Aid and fluorescent light bulbs.
There you go. Imagine getting the light tube, inventory. Like going out there and getting enough light tubes to suffice this 3-plus-hour show.
It's a lot of work. Like they have to rent a semi and fill it with just the plunder that's going to be used, right? And then fans can bring all their own weapons, which is also probably more scary, hearing some of the stuff that fans want to bring in for them to use on each other.
There was this vicious Saito suplex by Havoc, and then Bailey came back, did a cannonball off the chair into the corner, into light tubes, on top of Havoc, drags his back over the broken glass. They showed a close-up of Danny Havoc's back, and oh my god, you could do a collage of some of these dudes' backs, and they just, later on, they frequently would use, this looks like the remnants of a bad car crash. I don't think that does it justice for what some of these guys ended up like. Like when JC Bailey comes out later, what this man looks like he has been through is just frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his back is a mess. He hits the Tower of Penitentiary, which is essentially this draping ace crusher off the top onto light tubes. And then there's a running boot, double arm DDT by Havoc, getting a two count, Northern Lights by Havoc, and then a splash, double foot stomp by Bailey off the top onto light tubes. And then finally, it's a Northern Bomb after a light tube to the head as JC Bailey wins this in 10 minutes and 13 seconds. So pretty violent to start things off, and JC Bailey goes on to the second round.
I think Danny Havoc, though, is an incredible wrestler. JC Bailey, too, was obviously a good wrestler. But Danny Havoc now, like watching that guy move in the ring, it's like he is an incredibly skilled wrestler that you could tell could do anything but chooses to be a master of the light bulb tube.
Was he in the tournament you watched this year?
Yeah, and there's like watching him do some of these sequences, it's like it's awesome sort of like chain light bulb tube wrestling, I guess. Like, you know, like they're moving incredibly. Like very smoothly, and you know, once again, it's just that it's not amateurs that you're watching up there. These are people that are professionals that have chosen this style as opposed to another style that they could be doing.
Well, and I mean, the creative part of this is that many people can just say, "Oh, they're just doing hardcore wrestling with weapons." That's such a shortcut, but that allowance is across the board.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have inventive ways to wow this audience that has seen every violent form of weapon use on a show, you're not going to stand out. And that's where all these guys are trying to do that and stand out. And in the case of a JC Bailey or later Scotty Vortex, multiple times in one night. And that's where structuring all of this, of course, there's a skill set to that. And getting over with an audience that has an incredible high bar that they have attached to the expectations of this tournament and match by match.
And I also thought after this match, they did these post-match – I'm sure this was on the one
yes,
you watched.
Yes,
I thought Danny Havoc's promo was awesome. Like, he's a great promo.
There were a lot of good promos on this. Yeah, they would do replays of the key spots, and then there was a post-match attack. Danny Havoc just – he looked awful here. He's wrapped in barbed wire. Graham is yelling that Bailey is opening and closing the show tonight. Which would be true.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's a prophet.
Yeah. And some of the best lines came as they're walking to the back and the fans, you can just hear them like, great show. And Havoc is apologizing. He's like, I'm sorry, guys. And you could hear this little kid go, it's all right. And you could just hear these lines and it was just so weird. And oh my God, the blood and the cuts are like in a form of an X on his back. And then we had the Bailey promo backstage stating he's one step closer. Graham says they are killing everyone and it's the beginning of a beautiful day. They hug and they call each other best friends. I guess a precursor to Owens and Jericho.
this is the Owens and Jericho for the hardcore set.
And then Danny Havoc says his return was not glorious. He'd been on the shelf for 3 months with this injury. He can't hide injuries in this sport and can be taken advantage of. Bailey did that, beat him again, and he said he's had an unimpressive 2010 record. He has to go back to the gym, is going to drink a lot, and we got more close-up of the cuts on his bicep and chest. And yeah, I thought this was one of the better promos where it was not a promo where it was just negating the loss. It was treating it as like this failure by this guy and admitting that. And that's something you don't see a lot in professional wrestling is building stories off of losses. That can be very effective, I find, sometimes.
Yeah, like in the one I saw, there was obviously a storytelling angle, especially towards the end. But this one, it's amazing how there was a story kind of woven throughout the whole tournament. Mm-hmm. You know, like Cult Fiction.
Yeah, and the Suicide Kings. Yeah, that was the key feud that played itself out throughout. Okay, are you ready for this one, Damien? Do you need a breather? Do you need some water?
Well, this is one of those ones where I'm shocked that, and I guess that's why you do it, but this went on that early. Because this is two of the biggest names in deathmatch wrestling doing one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
I'm just going to angle you a little.
Oh, sorry, I'll move over. I'll move over.
I know you're new to the podcast.
I'm normally
I just
want to
make sure people hear. It's in the back of my head
here. I'm not used to the passenger seat, John. I'm normally just in the driver's seat, so.
Nick Gage against Abdullah Kobayashi, who would you call him the standout of this show? To this audience, he felt like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he, and also he's the one who I think had to work the hardest to kind of get over with this crowd.
Yeah, he was largely an unknown coming in from Big Japan. I mean, people probably heard of him but never seen him live.
Yeah.
And an older guy too. And coming in, and this was a weapons of mass destruction match. Gage won the tournament in 06, and this is, as we said, Kobayashi's first one.
And I think this might be Gage's last one, because he does wind up going to prison for a bank robbery.
Yes, at the end of this year, early 2011.
I think it was the end of this year.
So Gage does a promo and says, "Tell them who the fuck I am." Says he's beat the shit out of every motherfucker that has come to this company, which leads to a USA chant, and says that they are bringing in someone from Japan, and yells at the skinny motherfucker to play his music, which leads to Kobayashi's entrance. And he comes out, and he puts his hand up, and very few fans would high-five Abdullah Kobayashi. Not a hero's welcome.
A lot of fans give him the finger, some saying some racist stuff to him.
Not exactly a PC entrance not for the best Kobayashi.
Welcoming for a Japanese legend to America.
Yes. He was trained by Abdullah the Butcher, and hence the Abdullah moniker. And Gage does his own introduction. And Abdullah, it builds up to the spot where he takes the microphone and yells, "You cocksucker," to this giant pop. And from that moment, he had won over this crowd. And what would happen over the next 12 minutes was frightening.
Yeah.
This will go down as the most violent match I've probably ever seen.
I still think Joe versus Necro Butcher that we reviewed that one time is maybe more violent on a kick punch level, but this is just so absurd, the stuff they do.
Okay. I'm going to try and get through this. And if I pass out, Damien will keep it going.
I'll read John's notes.
Gage does Abdullah spits at him, and then Gage blows snot out at him. Hardly the most offensive thing in this match. Gage then used a light tube over Abdullah's head, and Abdullah takes a light tube and bites through the light tube, and this crowd is stunned at what they are seeing as one of the announcers yells he is having an ultra-violent orgasm.
He ate he looked like Cookie Monster with those light bulbs.
I mean, this dude came out, and between that promo and this biting spot, I mean, this crowd was in love with Abdullah Kobayashi.
I think you could put anyone out on Raw and give them these exact same two spots, and they would get over.
I don't think you will ever see that happen on Raw, Damien. I'm pretty safe in assuming that. They did a sidewalk slam onto these. They had these sharp objects. Now, is there a name for these?
Kenzans.
Kenzans.
They're used for Japanese flower arrangements, and they're used so you can stick a single stem of a flower in them and then put them at the bottom of a vase, and then so the flower just...
How is this spelt?
K-E-N-Z-E-N.
Okay.
Z-A-N?
I want everybody to Google an image of a...
No, that's not it.
No, that's definitely not it. Kenzan
plant? Z-A-N?
We're going to find this.
There we go.
It is. Okay. Type in K-E-N-Z-A-N, okay? And you will see the object we're talking about. Now, if you don't have this object in front of you, it is essentially a circular object holding, like, essentially nails.
Yeah, like looks like a very aggressive top of a weed grinder.
And these are, like, 2-inch long.
Yeah.
1 to 2 inches long.
Yeah.
You need this visual in your mind for me to accurately describe what you are about to hear from me running through this. So these objects are put on the mat, and there was a sidewalk slam onto them. Pretty horrific already. And this cuts open the back and chest of Gage. Gage used a keyboard as a fan yelled, "Facebook sucks," for this keyboard spot. He attacked him with this like Christmas tree weapon he had on a stick with like ornaments and with an empty water container at the end of it, which became a popular weapon on this show.
Yeah, it's one of those water jugs with a broom handle.
Like a large water jug you'd put on a cooler.
And then Christmas ornaments stuck around.
And they made these things by by the level of weapons on this show, I mean, this one, it was an empty water bottle for one container, and it made the loudest thud, but at least was not as violent as some of the other. Like, this isn't going to cut you. This, especially to the side, not the head. It's a pretty safe weapon to hit, and people reacted to every one of these thuds just because of the sound.
Yeah, especially later on when I think his brain damage uses a double-handed one, a double-sided
right,
one.
Right, yeah, like the American Gladiator deal.
But they still hurt. I got hit with one.
Oh, okay.
And it definitely was not like, you know, I'm sure it felt better than a
kid. I'm saying in moderation, yeah, you're right, yeah. In comparison, nothing here was a walk in the park.
No, nothing
okay?
was a walk.
I was going to say nothing was a bed of roses, but we got what they would plant roses on in these exactly. Kenzans. So Gage hit a diving headbutt off the top. Kobayashi came back with a shining wizard. And the commentator describes Abdullah the Butcher as the Nick Gage of the 70s.
Yeah.
So then we got the spot where a Kenzan was placed on top of Kobayashi's bald head with the nail portion going into the head. This was standing on top of his head, and Nick Gage took a chair, a steel chair, and walloped him over the top of the head, puncturing this Kenzan so it was firmly lodged into the skull of Kobayashi. And then did this a second time with another. So you had these, like, nails nailed into his head. I can't do justice to how sick this was. And how just, I couldn't believe what I was watching here, Damien.
Yeah. It's, Jeff Cannonball did a very similar spot this year with one getting hammered into his head. And the thing
that's, is this in the documentary? Because the documentary. I do not want to see it.
The thing that's crazy is when they take it out, and we got to see this later on.
And that is my scene.
That is the scene.
That I am talking about.
My scene, though, before we got that, what I thought you might be talking about is what Nick Gage does next to these things that he's just hammered into his head. Where he tries to remove them with his mouth, John.
He's biting on them.
He's biting on them. It's so holy.
I can't even tell you after that. Like, there was a thumbtack bat. There was an elbow drop by Kobayashi with tubes. And then he pinned Gage in 12:31. I was, like, in a state of delirium at this point because I wasn't even processing what was on the screen here. I was just stunned at what I was watching. And I never want to see anything like this again in my life, Damien. I couldn't stand this if this were choreographed in a horror movie and nobody was hurt in the process. This actually happened to a man who proposed this spot, or it was proposed to him, and there was an agreement.
Yeah.
That stuns me. Kobayashi got over huge here, but I wrote here, this was one of the most disgusting matches I have ever seen and never want to see anything like it again. That is what it says right here on my notes. This, bar none, is the most violent thing I have ever seen in professional wrestling in 25 years.
John, not the one with Jeff Cannonball. Granted, it's just one, not two, but it might be more horrific somehow.
Well, I will never see that, Damien. I guarantee you I will never see that, and it will never crack this as number one because I won't allow it to, okay?
All I know is one day you're going to open up an email that's going to say cuddly, friendly kitties, and next thing you're going to see.
I would never open an email that said that, Damien, so.
Don't worry. I'll find something. I'll be like.
You will be hearing from my lawyer.
Juicy UFC WWE tidbit scoop. And then next thing you're going to do, open it, Kenzan.
Okay, so.
What, you're skipping the part with the ticket?
No, I am not. I am not going to skip this as much as I would love to. I'd love for this to just be. Remember when. Who was it? It's when they take Batgirl to the Batcave on the old 70s Batman series.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or was it Commissioner Gordon? The one where they have to give them the spray to forget everything. Remember that?
Commissioner Gordon? I think it's Commissioner Gordon.
They do. They once took Commissioner Gordon to the Batcave, whoever it was. Maybe it was Commissioner Gordon. That is what I wanted here. I wanted to have some formula that I could just ingest and never remember this. That's what I wanted after this next scene. We got the Kobayashi promo with the Kenzans lodged firmly in his head. He says, I love deathmatch. And this is when he's still in the ring speaking to the people. And the crowd is chanting. I found this amusing. They were chanting Kobashi at Kobayashi. And Gage says, if he sees you or your Big Japan boys, he will fuck them up. And fans are shaking Kobayashi's hand. Now they've come around to him. And one guy just says, great to have you here. And he grabs a muffin from a fan and eats it. We got replays, promos after. Gage calls it bullshit backstage. He wants new referees around here because the current ones suck. That was his issue with the match. Can't say it was mine. Kobayashi says he had spent 15 years in Big Japan wrestling, and then he is being tended to by the medical personnel at Combat Zone Wrestling.
Well, there are real – there's an ambulance there, and there's a doctor.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God that we had a professional medical physician to deal with this man, because I didn't know what I was watching here. I feel I have a pretty good tolerance for watching shit. I couldn't get through this.
Yeah.
I had to turn away. This was just frightening, as this person is tugging, like forcibly pulling these Kenzans out of his head. His head is like, describe this, Damien. His head is contorting. There is like skin rising. Yeah. Like think of the most powerful magnet in the world if your head was all metal. It just rising up.
It's like Magneto's pulling the adamantium out of Wolverine.
Like this. I have no words for this. This scene was the most horrific scene I have ever seen in any professional wrestling environment.
It is one of those moments.
And anyone who disagrees with me, please go watch this.
Yeah. Well, or watch Jeff Cannonball have the one, because Jeff Cannonball takes four people to get it out of his head.
Oh, God.
It is. Yeah, this to me is the spot. And the thing that's crazy about this thing is it happens in the match, but if you're sitting in the back, you're not going to really see. You're just going to say he's got something stuck to his head.
You would have had people vomiting if they had done this in front of people.
I was dry heaving. It was done in front of me, John, backstage. I'm seeing this done. And I'm like, They're like, do you want to talk to him right now? I'm like, I just need
one. You were interviewing him as they were doing this?
I'm sitting like this far away from while they're doing it, John. This far away.
You're fucked.
I'm so fucked. Like, but you know what? This dude, like, I don't know about.
I can't promise you now I'm going to watch it. Not without a time code.
I'll tell you one thing about the Kobayashi. Like, I don't know what he does if you had a couple drinks, because, you know, by that point, maybe you wanted to loosen up. Jeff Cannonball, that kid's a straight edge vegan dude. There is nothing that is in the way of that pain. Not even a cheeseburger.
I just couldn't fathom this.
Yeah, like this to me is like I've heard of extreme body modifications, like, you know, people even getting amputations. But this to me is that level of extreme, because this is – that's – you feel your head. You like know how much skin's there.
Like this was not like a thumbtack that's piercing your body. Like you'll see thumbtacks that, you know, can go into the head. Like this was a long enough – nail portion of these Kenzans that it's like it is firmly in his head, the top, the crown of his head, and the pulling out of this. And it's not one, it's not like a thumbtack where it's one vertical nail going into it. Was like 20
more. It's like a mini bed of spikes. It's a mini bed of nails driven into your brain
per Kenzan, and there were two in there.
This
was just like if you have a moderate stomach for this, game over.
Yeah, this is like the Meltzer driver of extreme wrestling moves. Like there's nothing that you're going to see that is as flashy of a move.
Oh. I had to stop after this and take a break from Tournament of Death.
Well, that's the thing that also, like, you know, and you said it, like you never get desensitized to the violence, and there's definitely some other you know, amazing things that are coming up. But to me, this is
never. This was a different level that you're right. No other in-ring violence came near to me.
No. No, there was actually, and the other spot, the only other spot was in that first, the JC Bailey Danny Havoc match, where Danny Havoc's dumped on his head, and he lands on that light bulb thing that's wrapped in barbed wire.
Right.
And it's just like, and it's just all on his neck and head. That's another scene where I'm like, oh, but this is, yeah, like, just nothing competes.
So following that was Scotty Vortex and Dysfunction in a Panes of Glass match. This was Vortex's fifth tournament, and he's coming back from a broken arm and a member of the Suicide Kings. Both have thumbtacks. I didn't even realize this until the announcers were explaining it because it was very hard to see them. They had thumbtacks in their kick pads sticking out.
Yeah.
So I wrote down Kawada kicks here. Really doesn't do it justice. Picture Kawada kicks, but instead of shin, it's thumbtacks from that area.
It's like
going into your face.
Quad of porcupine kicks.
There was an exploder that sent Vortex into a pane of glass that does not break, so then he's powerbombed through it. There were kicks to the arm of Vortex. Remember, all the kicks mean thumbtacks. Dysfunction is placed under the glass. Chairs are set up, and Vortex does a double knee drop off the top through the pane of glass on top. That generates a two count. Another pane of glass is set up on two chairs in the opposite corner, and Dysfunction hits this twisting electric chair driver to Vortex through that glass, and Dysfunction has cut his left hand, and it is bleeding profusely to the point that he needs someone at ringside to give him like this tape to
– I think a towel. It looks like they wrap it around and tape it up.
It was a towel put around, and then he just vigorously taped it to put as much pressure on this wound as possible. And then the finish was the Blue Moon Dragon by Vortex, which was a Spanish fly off of the top by Vortex for the win. 6:48, it wouldn't surprise me if they ended this early because of the hand cut, because this was a shorter match than the other tournament matches, and his hand looked very worrisome.
Yeah, and I guess that's like right by arteries and things like that too. And I was
what are we doing, Dave? What are we discussing?
Regretting not watching Robbie Brookside. I think this match for me, I'm like, I think if I was going to have to do any match in this one, this might be the one I pick. Because I think a pane of glass.
You know who's loving this is Wei.
Oh, Wei is definitely loving
this. He's fucking howling right now.
It's so – because I watched this so late at night just because I'm
– got to make sure your kids are not within 100 feet of the screen.
Oh, my God. They don't know this exists. They're just learning about Bailey. You know, imagine
– And not J.C. Bailey.
No, not J.C. Bailey. Just Bailey. No J.C.
Dysfunction did his promo backstage. He says he's a wreck. His skull and hand are split open. He's happy to be back, and he wants a rematch with Vortex at Tournament of Death 10.
Wait till next year.
Vortex says he's going all the way. This is his year. So.
Got a point.
Were you a fan of the Vortex ride at Canada's Wonderland?
I don't think I ever got to go on the Vortex, John.
You never went on the Vortex?
Well, because here's the thing.
That's a staple there.
I remember Wonderland. The first year I was there, the lineup was too big. Yeah. Then I moved to England for a year, and then I came back, and I was 320 pounds.
Couldn't
and
get
those,
on.
Those harnesses just hurt.
Wow.
Like the bigger you are, that's the thing about those rides. Like, it wasn't the I'm not scared of rides, but it was the movement. So now that I've lost all this weight, I've got kids, I'm not taking them on the Vortex yet. They're probably going to more likely see a Vortex match before they go on the Vortex itself. No, that's not true. They'll go on the Vortex.
That's the next level after Bailey. It's roller coasters.
Roller coasters.
Yeah, that's the next one they want.
I think I might be bringing Holden to his first wrestling show at NXT.
You're going to take him to TakeOver?
Yeah.
Is he more interested in TakeOver than Survivor Series?
He's more interested in individual wrestlers at this point because it's like the shows are on too late for him to stay up and watch.
Yeah.
And so he's more only just watching individual matches. So
and listening to the podcast.
Yeah, you know what it's like. So he's got he's a big fan of MVP now. So if MVP was wrestling in anyone, he'd go and see that.
Okay.
And he's a big fan of Chris Jericho. But John Cena. So I guess he would love to see John Cena wrestle. But.
So you're taking him to the event where there's no Bailey, no Cena, and no Jericho.
Because, John, you didn't let me get to my fourth one.
Oh, okay.
Nakamura. Because showed him Wrestle Kingdom 9, his first wrestling match.
With English or Japanese commentary?
Actually, we did the Japanese commentary because I didn't have – but the English commentary was great.
I feel a kid would love the Japanese commentary. Yeah, I think it's so energetic and
– and I was just trying to show him also because I showed him – I forget which – I showed him something from CMLL, like an old CMLL match.
Uh-huh.
And I was just trying to show him how wrestling is taken up so differently in different places, and it's not just this one thing that you see in North America. Because I think
– you're a very responsible wrestling parent.
Well, I just think that's like you – know,
son, there's more to life than WWE.
There's
CMLL.
There's more than the superstar main event style. There's deathmatch hold. And here's – let me introduce you to this world next.
Masada, the man that you interviewed for your documentary, was next.
Hey, John, this people have – before we get into mm-hmm. – do you think he looks like he could be Jeff Hardy's brother?
Masada?
Facially?
Yes. Sure, that could pass.
I've say that to people and they're like, what are you talking about? But I think facially that he looks like a bigger Jeff Hardy. Mm-hmm. Like he looks like he could be the other brother.
Yeah. Taking on Devin Moore, who we had seen earlier in the show during the DJ Hyde introduction. Masada would win a number of future Tournament of Deaths. Not this one. And Moore's in his second go-around. Moore is out because this had been a mystery opponent and had led to everyone believing it would be Zandig showing up and taking the eighth spot, but it was not. And the announcers said he was too scared, and it was Moore who was going to take the empty slot. So what was going on at this point with John Zandig?
I think as far as I know, and I'm not an expert on CZW like a lot of people are, so I'm just like a novice – but I think Zandig might have been supposed to come back and then didn't and had just kind of left the company. He came back a couple more times before coming back permanently now. But, yeah, so I think it was something that was hoped for, that it would be Zandig. But instead we got the Mexicools entrance.
Yeah, so Moore is out. And immediately there's a spinning
– oh, you left – you made, now it made it just seem like I threw out some thing about the Mexicools entrance. He rode in on a little lawnmower.
Yes, he did come out.
Like the Mexico style.
Yes.
You just buried that, John.
Well, wasn't even in my notes, so I can't say it registered with me. But that's why you're here, fill in the gaps. So Moore hit a spinning plancha, and then Masada used a chair and a garbage lid shot. They fight over – this was the only match other than the tag match that kind of got out of the – ring and ringside environment. They went over to the commentary area, which – as best we can describe, it was like on this wooden makeshift stage behind the crowd. So these announcers
– that's where it still is too.
This I can't say this 100% certain, but it did not appear these announcers had monitors. I would think not, right?
No, because there's a point where –
think of how much they had to call and they're watching this from a distance.
Yeah, there's a point where they even talk about – and I forget what it is, but we even see on camera
– well, the tag match where they go off into the field.
Yeah.
I don't know how they were calling – they basically said we cannot even see what's going on. And I was actually amazed at what they could call unless they did some of it in post, which it did not sound like they did.
No, I don't think – I think they maybe know a little bit of where things are going. I don't know for sure. But like – but there's – yeah, there's a point where I think Masada pulls something out and they're like, we don't even know what it is. We can't see. The crowd is reacting though. But yeah, like that's – it keeps coming – like, you know, these announcers, I thought they were great. And, you know, maybe it's because I went to a show and didn't hear them, and now to hear them on the show gave me a different perspective on it. But I think they also, you know, they're doing it on a shoestring. They don't have anyone in their ear. They don't have monitors. So they're kind of producing themselves at this point.
Masada hit a brainbuster onto this long board across a chair and a table, and Moore's face was all bloody by this point. There was a ladder draped onto two chairs, and then we got a windshield, like a full-size windshield off like a Toyota. And it's brought out on top of the ladder. The ladder was not enough. We needed a windshield on top of this. And they are on the stage above. Moore blocks this and monkey flips Masada onto the windshield and ladder off of the stage.
Have you seen the Jackass movie, or it's maybe it's the Steve-O movie where he tries to jump through a car windshield?
Yes.
And how hard it is?
Windshields are very hard and difficult to break by design.
By design.
That is – they are – half the word is shield. Oh, so Moore followed that with a running shooting star press off the stage for a two count. They go back into the ring. Masada's head gets driven into the windshield. He's bleeding. He catches Moore with an overhead belly to belly. Two Moore on top of a seated chair. Those are more underrated because there's no way to land on a seated metal chair without it being horrific for your insides. Then there is a stick. Oh, God, this spot. Forgot about this one. We had these, like, miniature sticks. These sharpened sticks. Like
yakitori skewers.
Man, you really were up on the terminology for this, and I thank you for it, because I just wrote sticks into the skull of Moore.
Yeah.
And there were, like, a dozen of these sticking in his head as he continued and then fought back and hit a super kick with these sticks coming out of his skull. There's a Yakuza kick by Moore as a tribute to Trent Acid, then a tornado flatliner for a two count. He calls for the mother effin' bomb, which Masada blocks, hits a pair of suplexes, the last one onto our trusty friend, the windshield, and gets the victory at 11:35, and upon landing, the sticks fell out of Moore's head. A line I never thought I would use on a podcast.
Well, in the past 5 years, John, that since this one, or 6 years since this one has taken place, that move has been evolved, and now what they do is stab the person in the head with a brick of those.
Oh, okay.
At once, so they all fan out, and the blood runs up the wood. It almost looks like a blooming flower. It is. It's something that I will never forget.
Hey, man, it's a wide canvas for everyone to paint on, but it's not the area that I'm going to frequent too often.
Well, I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's a professional wrestler, and I was telling him that I was going to go do this back when I was going to go to this doc, and he was like, got very silent. I'm like, are you not a fan of that kind of wrestling? He's like, no, I call it garbage wrestling. And so he and I went back and forth and talked about it, and I'm like, I remember hearing this interview once with Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden, who described punk as being not music because they were working so hard to play this technical metal, and these punk bands were just getting up there and doing whatever they pleased in his view. And so I'm like, you know, like what you're saying is kind of like the Bruce Dickinson approach to music, but to wrestling. You're like, you're saying that there's only one way to do it, but these people are just choosing to do it a different way. And what they're emphasizing is different priorities in what they do. So,
oh, yeah. I don't condemn anyone that enjoys this, that participates in it. I have all the respect in the world for these people that participate in this because it is insane, some of the stuff in here. But I always recall this conversation when I was working at CIUT, Damien, and
89.5.
And I was chatting with I was there working one day, and the music director was just meeting with someone who had come in.
John, you're bearing the lead, Mopa Dean.
No, it was not Mopa
Dean. It wasn't Mopa by that point.
No, this was a man by the name of Ron Bird.
Okay.
Do you remember him?
I don't know. I think I was
maybe missed him.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's talking with a guy who had come in, and they're just talking about kind of the state of music. And this guy goes to the music director saying, there's too much music out there anyway. You can't differentiate yourselves. There's too much out there. And the music director is like, what are you talking about? That's like saying there's too many books out there. There's too much knowledge out there. There's too much to learn from. And it's like that's the same in any walk of life. I'm never going to begrudge different concepts of professional wrestling. And might not be my cup of tea. Doesn't mean it's not others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just my opinion. So I just have a hard time watching some of this and looking at these guys and the long-term effects of some of this.
Yeah. But I think that's all wrestling. Like, obviously, this is the most extreme. But anytime you watch someone wrestle, you know, especially now that we know kind of the end results. And I'm not even talking about people that abuse their bodies or anything like that. But just like –
there is no safeguard.
If Hulk Hogan is fucked – you know, and that guy probably was one of the, you know, lightest sort of, you know, or at least self-preservationist.
This is the most philosophical review of Wei we've ever had.
It's definitely. I wish Wei was here to share in this, but he's instead going to be.
You're going to get so much praise, and I'm going to get.
No, people are going
to be. Fuck Pollock. What a snob.
Did you see he didn't see it because thank God he didn't tweet you. He's like, I really hope you're not one of John Pollock's guests.
Someone sent that to you?
Yeah, but then they did qualify it, and they said it was because I dissed Mineral, the emo band, last time I was on the show.
Oh, boy.
I know. Wait till you hear this one.
Yeah, man.
No, I'm not going to diss any
band. I was pretty taken aback when you insulted them too, Damien. I was like, man, he crossed a line with me.
That's why it took 6 months for me to come back.
Yeah. So next up, we finished that match, and Billy Graham, we didn't even mention, was, of course, with Masada, mm-hmm. who's also part of Cult Fiction. Afterwards, they're complaining about Masada having to face someone he didn't sign up for, and Devin Moore said that Necro and Zandig are scared and says he looks up to Onita, Terry Funk, and Abdullah the Butcher, not Kobayashi, before anyone else. So citing his role models in the sport. And then Moore says he wasn't even supposed to be here today. Nice Kevin Smith reference here. And replaced Zandig, who no-showed. Fuck what the crowd thinks. Says he's man enough to say he lost. And he is going to be facing... He says Drew Blood is dead on July the 10th. So it was Drew Blood that he's facing at Acid Fest.
Yeah.
And I believe that was a Loser Leaves Town match. And it was Johnny Cashmere who had set it up to, or is running Acid Fest. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Because he was Trent's partner, of course. So... I think that was it, because he had said in the opening he was answering Cashmere's challenge, but I know it was Drew Blood was the one he was on the match with.
Okay. So, did you ever watch Acid Fest? That's like a legendary show.
No, I haven't seen it.
I got to watch it, because that's one of those ones that people kind of talk about.
Then we had a non-tournament match, because we were at the end of the first round, and we had a tag match. Joe Gacy and Sammy Callahan, now Jeremiah on Lucha Underground, yeah. The on-screen boyfriend of Ivelisse.
He looks so young here.
He does look young in 2010. Taking on DJ Hyde and Greg Excellent in a Fans Bring the Weapons match, and the production brings the Roving Camcorders match, yep. Because this one was all over the place. There was an attack on... Am I mixing this up? Was this the crazy match that went everywhere, or was that the...
No, this went everywhere.
Yeah, this was the match I'm thinking of. Yes, okay. I thought I had my my grudge matches out of order here. So Gacy and Callahan go by the Switchblade Conspiracy, and there was an attack on Kylie Pierce, which set up this grudge feud with Callahan putting her in the stretch muffler to lead to this match, as DJ Hyde and Greg Excellent are taking up her revenge. And they fight at the entrance as soon as Hyde and Excellent come out. Callahan uses an actual stretcher, and then they start fighting around the field. And the cameras are following them. The fans are following them. You are in an open field having a hardcore match.
It is. That's like the thing, the most fun thing about going to this event. And like, I know, John, you're kind of like, maybe the violence is taking you to a place where you don't want to go. But I just think it's sort of an experience. It's so... You know, and I know that they've done this in DDT too, where they've had matches yep. out in the woods and things like that. But it just
this was way better than the New Day segment with the Wyatts
way
a few months
than the
ago.
New Day. This was like the final deletion, almost IRL. But it's you know, like there's a huge field, and they jump off the car. They trashed our rental van. We brought our rental van back next day, and they're like, we drop it off. We're late. They're like, what about the roof? And we look on the roof. It's all scratched and covered in blood.
Oh, my God.
All these guys had been going over to the car and using it to jump off. And, like, there was one person that had a pickup truck, which was just at the end of it filled with broken boards, barbed wire, and glass, just because people were using that as a place. I think that's where one of the pinfalls even happened, in the back of someone's pickup truck.
Did you get dinged for this by the rental company?
We got no-fault insurance, John. We knew what we were going into.
I would have loved that scene to be the final scene in your documentary, where you're explaining Tournament of Death to the rental company why there's blood on the car.
Well, the guy that we returned it to was like, what did you do?
Crazy story, bro. Yeah.
Don't call the police. Here's $50.
So the match continues. DJ Hyde got Irish whipped into a bush. The announcers can't see anything. This was just crazy. Excellent is all bloody here instantly. I don't even know what the cause was. It could have been a multitude of things. Callahan dived out of a tree onto Hyde. Just reading my notes, which I haven't like read since writing them. There's a guardrail that gets balanced between the ring and the other guardrail. By the way, Callahan diving out of the tree was one of the more underrated spots of the entire night.
And he's so big.
Like, this guy's coming out of a full fucking tree onto a guy with a crossbody. The guardrail gets balanced between the ring and two other guardrails horizontally.
Excellent is standing on it, and the legs get pulled out, and he takes a back bump on it. Callahan then uses a physical vinyl record. Hyde ducks, and he nails Gacy. They tie Hyde into the ropes, and then they grab a watermelon. And they go to break it over Hyde's head, and the crowd boos because the watermelon doesn't break. So Hyde gets out of the ropes, fights back, and Hyde grabs the watermelon, and in the line of the night, hits a watermelon to the melon of Gacy. This was the closest we got to a comedy deathmatch.
Yeah,
light tubes are broken on Hyde and Callahan. Callahan is just hitting him over and over and over with tubes. Hyde is just bleeding. His back, half of his back is just unrecognizable. It's just a bloody mess. And then he takes these things that they called poppers, like these bottle caps that had to have been more violent than just bottle caps. There had to be, like, poison on the edges of them or something.
Serrated edges.
Callahan hit the zigzag to Greg Excellent for a two count. And then Hyde gets knocked off the apron by Callahan onto this barbed wire structure where he was – that's where he remained for the rest of this match and was tied up in it. They had to pull it out of his skin.
It looked like it must – that would suck because it'd be your weight that would be getting you tangled in that barbed wire, right? Because it's like
– yes.
It's just like
– because he was wearing like jean shorts and no shirt. You're already bloody, so you have open wounds landing on the barbed wire. And then we were introduced to the plate of forks, which went into the back of Greg Excellent, not Excellent. And then there were glass on top of two chairs with barbed wire on top of it. Gacy powerbombed Excellent, who, for my money, took so much damage. I mean, Greg Excellent was just destroyed in this match. Goes through it, and upon the replay, here I'm listing the chairs, the glass, the barbed wire. We had a television set underneath there, too, just for good measure.
Fans bring the weapons. You know, you got an old tube TV. What are you going to do with it?
And this was the end, as Greg Excellent was pinned in 15 minutes and 13 seconds, and bolt cutters were necessary to cut the barbed wire that Hyde was trapped in from his fall off the apron. The crowd is chanting DJ after he was destroyed in this match. You can say that this had a conclusion to it. Joe Gacy and Sammy Callahan were your undisputed victors in this grudge battle.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess the feud would continue.
I guess so, yes. Oh. Kylie Pierce and her revenge was not realized by DJ Hyde and Greg Excellent.
It's funny, too, because, like, I guess you need these as a pause because they had these non-tournament matches this year, too. They have them every year.
Oh, you need these guys to have a little breather.
But it's almost like you'd want – maybe you should have, like, a different type of match. Like, that's – yeah, just like a straight Lucha Libre trios match.
Do, like, the European rounds.
Yeah. You do, like, you know, you have a complete break. Actually, do you remember that ROH show we went to, just because you brought up the European rounds, where it was Fit Finlay against Roderick Strong in, like, it was some sort of special rules match?
Yeah.
And people were booing. So maybe
was this a Wrestle Reunion show?
No, it was a Ring of Honor. It was a Border Wars.
Huh.
Well, yes. Years ago.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So people were booing. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, because if you go for one style of wrestling and you try and put another style on there, some of the audience is not going to get it. And I think that would probably be the same with the deathmatch stuff.
If you go back, it was very brief, but what an underrated run of when Fit Finlay was let go in 2011, right, with the flag controversy around WrestleMania, like a week out. And for the next year, he just did all these indies and was working with all this great talent. I mean, that was a fun year to, like, just watch Fit Finlay, even at his age, just, he had some really fun matches during that year he was away.
Yeah, that Roderick Strong match was awesome. And, like, I think you're right, because it's like that's where you have someone and you're like, oh, wouldn't it be amazing if this guy was able to wrestle this guy and this guy and this guy?
And you got that for a year with Fit. He did a lot of shows in that year.
I also look at that as being Daniel Bryan's run when he got fired and before he got rehired, and he went back and it was just like
2 months.
Yeah, it was 2 months where it's like, okay, let's get every possible dream scenario.
He even, when he came back at SummerSlam that year, he still filled out dates after that. So you got a few more months there on the back end of that. Second round. Are you ready? Yes. JC Bailey and Abdullah Kobayashi, who is still living for this round, in a log cabin light tube match. What is a log cabin light tube? Do you want to explain this grouping of light tubes?
It's where you basically make a lattice work of light tubes, like in a Lincoln Log thing, right? That's that one. Because they also had the birdcage of light tubes in this one, too.
Oh, yeah, the birdcage.
Many
variations of the light tube. You can't just have individual light tubes.
You got to shake it up.
Up like the ante.
You know, someone's already done that. They've already had one wrapped in barbed wire. How do you build structures out of them? That's the next layer.
Dare I say, they were watching light tube spots, and one day a light went over someone's head, said, hey, what if we put them all together? By the way, your technical breakdowns of these weapons, top-notch today, Damien. You really have brought your A-game.
I feel like, I had to – if you were going to be breaking down the violence, I had to be here for some sort of color commentary.
So the winner of this match was the one who could put his opponent through three of the five light tube log cabins.
Yeah.
This was a best 3 out of 5.
And you could – and then you had to score a pinfall at the end.
Right, yes. You had to do that in order to was there a pinfall at the end of this?
Well, because I remember – I'm trying to remember if there was a pinfall, but I know there's that one Kobayashi tries to go for a pinfall at one point. And they're like, you don't have enough structures broken.
See, I didn't understand if it was that or if they were just explaining there are no pinfalls in this match.
The commentator said that he hadn't broken enough.
Let's be honest. It completely does not matter.
The end of these
matches, the pinfalls mean nothing.
The pinfalls are completely inconsequential.
No. Kobayashi comes out. His head is totally bandaged up, which if you watch that removal of the Kenzans, like I was expecting a softball on top of his head, which like you got like this circular object almost protruding from the swollen nature of his skull.
Yeah.
That is all taped up with this like the white tape that's over and around his jaw, keeping this thing closed or at least attempting to.
Why wouldn't they just give him a helmet at this point? Like one of those soft
You probably
helmets.
Couldn't put one on.
Probably right.
No, painful that would be. I mean, God, he is.
Everything you would do would be painful.
Like, I don't know how this man continued. It was insane. Bailey immediately, first of all, the crowd is chanting Kobayashi. I mean, he was the cult favorite here in this tournament. I mean, if you go back, this was the guy who got all the adulation of this. He may have not won the tournament, but to me, he was the star of this year's show to this audience. Mm-hmm. Bailey immediately tries to take the tape off, and he opens up a cut on the forehead of Kobayashi. Both are going for covers early, which don't count. The log cabin gets placed on top of Kobayashi, and Bailey hits a double stomp off the top to break the first log cabin, and he's up 1-0. Then Kobayashi's arm gets cut with the light tube, and he gets out of this by applying a hammer lock. Good old Kimura for Kobayashi to get some technical wrestling back into this.
Where did Kobayashi, do you know, did he have anything outside of Big Japan? Or was he just like, do you know where did he train? Was he had like a, did he have a run as a regular wrestler? Because he can do other moves, you can see in this match too.
I mean, he did, like the Shining Wizard and stuff like that. I don't know the other places beyond Big Japan that he did. I mean, he was, largely known for his reputation for death matches, but I don't know if there was a different style that preceded that or where he actually did start beyond Big Japan. Kobayashi then stopped Bailey on top by throwing a chair at him, placed a log cabin on top of Bailey, and hit an elbow drop off the top to even it at 1. Kobayashi went back to the Breakfast of Champions.
Would you rather, though, John, be the person receiving that or elbow dropping on top of that? Because I'm just thinking
– are you seriously asking me this question?
Because I'm just like both person. Would you rather have those –
dude, that was all these weapon shots where it was like freaking – like we saw a goddamn Spanish fly administered going through glass.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the person taking it and delivering it? You're both going through glass.
Oh, God, do I wish I was listening to this podcast. This is like the best John Pollock episode ever. Oh,
Wei Ting's in a coma right now from listening. So Kobayashi is biting down on these light tubes, driving them into the forehead of Bailey, and then this is where we got the birdcage of doom placed over Bailey, kicks it into his back and chest, Shining Wizard Kobayashi up 2-1. Bailey then shoves the referee into the ropes. This crotches Kobayashi, and a superplex is delivered onto a log cabin. We are knotted up at 2. And then Bailey used a globe, like a spinning globe you would see in a classroom, onto Kobayashi. I guess to emphasize the international nature of this match here, U.S. versus Japan, hit him with a chair shot to the head, takes the tape off, and hits him with another chair to the head.
Oh, God.
There is a log cabin placed on him, and Bailey hit a senton off the top for the final log cabin to break at 10 minutes and 8 seconds. To my recollection, there was not a fall, and Bailey wins this 3-2, and chants of please come back are given to Kobayashi, and we just see all these shards of glass covering his back and arm and the state this guy was in after these two matches. Both of these guys. Bailey had to come back for a third match in the finals. Just unreal.
Yeah. It's not... And they don't get bandaged up in between, right? Like they get a little bit of medical attention, but for the most part, they want him to look.
Like, what do you think was the time between... Kobayashi was the second match. I mean, at most, he probably got 45 minutes, an hour in between this, and even less than that before the finals.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it happens so quick. And, like, you see them backstage, and they're just getting ready. And it's...
There were two matches as a buffer between the second round match and coming back for the final, which Masada and Vortex, one match in between before the finals. Yeah. I mean, it just, one, pardon the pun, bleeds into the next. So Masada and, oh, first of all, Bailey and Graham did a promo, and Kobayashi just did a promo in Japanese complaining about the three count. And I guess he was thrown off by the rules.
Yeah.
So
I guess there was a three count. There was a pinfall.
Oh, I took it to mean he was not aware of these rules of the log cabin.
So we still don't know if it
so a disputed finish on Kobayashi's part. Masada and Scotty Vortex in our second semifinal, and there were barbed wire boards set up throughout the ring, and Masada hit this reverse vertical suplex, sending Vortex into a board in the corner, and then stomped a board with barbed wire going into Vortex. And then, just when I thought it couldn't get worse, cinder blocks.
Yeah. There's like, a whole row of them.
Like, not the gimmick kind you would see in the odd WWE angle. No. Honest to God, cinder blocks. I was like, fuck, Damien. I'm not going to make it.
I think this, like, you know, obviously the Kenzan stuff is gross for its set of reasons. The cinder blocks and the use of cinder blocks to me is the most terrifying aspect of deathmatch wrestling.
Like there's no
forget you. If you bump into a cinder block the wrong way when you're walking, it hurts.
Like there's nothing even flat to land on. I mean, these have like rigid edges. It's cement.
Especially when they start breaking.
So first of all, the announcer accidentally called Billy Gunn, and the other announcer's like, he's here? Underrated line of the night.
I'm an ass man. Starts playing.
Can you imagine if they ever like enticed like an ex-WWE guy into one of these?
I'm sure they must have, right? Like there must have been – we got to go through the years of this, but like there have been definitely future WWE guys. Like
futures,
Dean Ambrose did a TOD.
Yep, and we would see Drake Younger later. Yep. So – Vortex is hitting him with kicks. Graham comes in, attacks Vortex, knocks him down, and knocks down the referee, rather. Then there's a powerbomb to Vortex onto a light tube log cabin, and then attacks him with a shovel. And referee Brent Lauderdale sends Graham into the barbed wire board inside of the ring, taking him out. Vortex is then draped on the barricade with a barbed wire board on top. Masada comes off the top with a chair shot to the board, and Masada is just massacring Scotty Vortex, who's kind of like this underdog role. I mean, he's giving up the size here to Masada and just getting destroyed throughout. So Masada sets up the cinder blocks, scoop slams Scotty Vortex onto them three times, and then stands on him as Vortex kicks out. And this led to Vortex firing up, slapping both of them back and forth. Masada has trouble balancing the board onto two chairs, creating what was identified as the ramp of doom. Vortex blocked a powerbomb by Masada, hit the double knees off the top that put Masada through the ramp of doom. And then Graham is in the ring, and he hits Graham low, and then Vortex gets hit with a baseball bat with tacks and light tubes. Are you following here? Then Masada recovers. He hit a powerbomb onto the board. Graham's hair is stuck in the barbed wire, which you brought up. Legit hair.
Yeah, legit hair.
Caught in the barbed wire.
Which is funny because it didn't happen the first time he got put into that board. And I was wondering if that was going to be the case because, you know, I've every time I've seen wrestling with barbed wire and people with long hair gets caught in it. But he managed to escape it the first time. But then that second time he got it all tangled up.
It ended with the spiral lightning and Mahistral Cradle as Vortex got the pinfall. 15 minutes and 46 seconds they went here. One of the longer matches of the day. And after this, how did you read this post-match? Because Masada looked like he legit lost it on some fan yelling something
in
at
the crowd.
Him. You know, they had some screw-ups like setting up the ramp, and I don't know if it was tied to that or what the comment was. You couldn't hear it. But he looked like he was legit going after this fan, which could have been him just playing his role. But he looked fucking pissed here. And it just storms to the back and shoves another fan on the way to the back, which kind of that is like the line that even at this level, you stay away from touching fans just for legal purposes. But Masada looked fucking furious here, and there was no post-match promo here.
Well, you see the – I think he's the vice president of CZW at this point, Maven, trying to get him back there,
right.
Just trying to cool him out. And he's like, fuck you. Get in my fucking way. I will – like, none of these dudes are a joke. Like, that's the one – like, you know, obviously some are nicer than others. But, like, when we went to an indie show the night before that we didn't – none of this is in the dock. And we're just like – you know, DJ's like, oh, they know you're coming. Just film everyone. It's cool. They all know you're coming. Our camera guy shoots Masada. He's like, get that camera out of my fucking face before I smash you. And then, you know, Eddie Kingston, same sort of situation. Like, it was really like they did not know we were coming. And also that's when you realize that, like, what they're doing is really scary. And so you'd have to be kind of a scary person to be willing to do that.
Yeah, probably. This would not be the show where I would say any fans – should be catcalling any of the performers.
No. And Masada was cool later on when I got to talk to him. He was a really nice person. But, like, at the same time, like, the adrenaline and the pain he must be in having been through that, and you're sitting there and you're going to say something to this person and not expect them to get maybe a little flipped?
So, again, no post-match promos here from either guy. And then we got our second non-tournament match. This was Drake Younger, who is now a referee in the WWE. Is there a guy that – I mean, you know what Drake Younger looks like.
Yeah.
And his age, you would never guess.
No. I think – well, you brought this up, I think – was it last week with Brayden or did you bring it up with Nate? You brought this up recently on the show.
I did. You're right.
And I heard you say it and I kind of – I didn't believe that that was his age because then I checked and it's like
– yep.
Wow, that is
– he was born in 1984.
But also, I'm always amazed when someone can have a run that he's had, a career like he's had, where he's been kind of at the top of this very marginalized world of wrestling and managed to transition into becoming a referee in this completely other different world of professional wrestling.
Oh, yeah. It's like two different lives in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
And good for this guy, man. Yeah, you're an absolutely. Employee in WWE.
He's
probably makes a very comfortable living.
He must be
job security.
He must be a really smart guy to be able to navigate that world. Like I've all, you know, I think as anyone who's been inside that place can tell you that it's a very complicated thing, and to be able to navigate the world of Masada and then be able to navigate the world of Vince McMahon, you got to have a pair of brains on your shoulders. Pair of brains work, John? No, it doesn't. Set of brains? Fuck it, move on.
Well, that segues well because the opponent is brain damage.
Perfect.
This, Damien, was the final of Tournament of Death 6 that Drake Younger won in 2007. As we go through our chronology, Younger was 25 at the time and also the tag champion with Eddie Kingston, who you had just mentioned, and had been laid out by Cult Fiction at the last show. And Drake Younger was a member of the Suicide Kings, Brain Damage, who's a big dude, a member of Cult Fiction.
And he's also wearing, like, where'd you buy raver pants that?
Hot Topic.
But, like, he's huge. Do you think they sell raver pants for, like, 6'8" people at Hot Topic?
Yeah, you'd have to go to one of those, maybe.
Big and tall raver store.
Yeah, big and tall ravers.
Big and tall Hot Topic.
So, you're late into the show.
you've got to expand the weaponry. So this was our glass fists match. This is not the kind of fist that the Revival is talking about.
No.
All fists, no flips.
No.
Though if they ever do a glass fist match, the Revival really set themselves up to be those guys. If they ever have that kind of blood feud in NXT.
This might be the one line WWE never, ever, ever crosses.
No. This will probably be a match your son will not be taking in if it ever occurs with Dawson and
Maybe I'll show him the classic Taipei death match just so he can see.
Please don't, Damien.
Where this all started.
So they both had their fists taped and there's like these buckets of glass that they just put their fists in, covering them with glass. And then we just start fighting. We just start throwing fists.
Was the Taipei Deathmatch in ECW? That's the first one, right?
Yes.
ECW one. And that's where I guess all these kind of come in tribute to it.
Yes. Yes. With Axel and Ian.
Yeah.
And Younger mounts brain damage and is striking him in the face with the glass.
Just feeding him with punches.
We got another vertical suplex, this time to brain damage on top of a seated chair, and then he poured the bucket of glass on top of brain damage. Then dropped glass onto his face, onto his mouth. Like, some of this must have been, like, gone into his, like, into his mouth.
They say when you get hit by those light bulbs, you exhale. When you hit a light bulb, when those things happen, you blow out. You don't want to be inhaling at all because there's glass dust and all the other stuff. So I imagine like
– could you imagine just skills. A tiny piece of that
it gets
swallowed?
Yeah. Like you know, people die from drinking chips of glass in their beers. Like I can only imagine when you've got a sheet dropped on your face.
So it's all Drake Younger from the start. And finally he eats this forearm and then Younger's head is placed on a chair and brain damage hits the double knees off the turnbuckle and this cuts – Drake Younger open, and he uses the American Gladiators deal that we talked about with this stick with the empty water containers at each end. Use this as a weapon. Younger then splashes a tube on top of brain damage, then a DVD onto a chair for a two count. There is a scoop slam to Drake Younger onto a bunch of light tubes tied together for a two count. And then, as if I couldn't be more horrified, brain damage stands on top of Drake Younger's head, which, if you're following along at home, has been sliced open. So what happens to this wound when you apply pressure from a man standing on your cranium? Well, it forces the blood to squirt out like a water gun with a close-up by the cameraman of this blood squirting out. Damien, are you just numb at this point watching this?
I was watching this,
because I wasn't. I was still horrified this late in the show.
Well, I was watching this at this point and being like, how are TOD like videos not the most watched?
Virally passed around
videos? Yeah, like, it's just like this level. Like, it's just crazier than just about anything you'd see on Live Leak or anything like that.
So, somehow, this match continued after this. There was a spinning back fist by Younger with the glass. And brain damage then stops, power bombs him onto light tubes, hits a package pile driver onto the glass, and brain damage wins at 11 minutes and 17 seconds. And the crowd cheered for Younger during the post-match as the Cult Fiction faction picked up a victory over the Suicide Kings squad represented by Drake Younger here. I know Eddie Kingston on this show, who was his tag partner, and I believe left the promotion shortly after.
I think he does, and I don't think he's been back since, I don't think, right? Maybe once or twice, I don't know. But he's definitely, you know, like if you were going to do like a Mount Rushmore of CZW wrestlers, Eddie Kingston, Drake Younger would definitely be up there. I'm surprised brain damage didn't ever get a shot in WWE. Like he's so big, he's like a pretty like... got an interesting look, seemed pretty comfortable yelling at people in the crowd. Like, he just seems like that would have been someone that would have had a shot at some point, but I guess they decided.
He was really over as a babyface here, Younger.
No, no, I meant brain damage.
Oh, yeah, because of the size. Yeah, I just thought with Drake Younger coming out, I mean, this crowd just,
oh yeah,
they really love this guy.
They love him. And I think that's the, you know, this is a fan base that, one of the most passionate fan bases in pro wrestling. If people think TNA fans, like the diehard TNA fans are loyal, the CZW fans, like, they or something else.
Time for the finals, Damien. It's JC Bailey against Scotty Vortex in a tables, ladders, and light tubes deathmatch rules.
Yes.
All right. So that is the stage here for our final match. Bailey comes out just looking a mess. He is covered in blood. He is full of cuts all over himself. There is no Billy Graham because of the earlier incident, but he would appear. And the ring is just full of weapons, light tubes, ladders, tables. And then we have Vortex come out. They do the introductions, and Bailey jumps him from behind during the ring introduction. He climbs to the top, and as he had come out, he had placed a table full of light tubes. He positioned it on the floor right in front of the ring post. So as Bailey climbs, Vortex shoves him, and he does a forward flip through the table with the light tubes across the table. This was just nuts 30 seconds into the match, and Bailey plunging through this table. That was the start of the match.
And Scotty Vortex's white shorts by this point are a disgusting red-brown color.
Yes, he had like these basketball shorts,
yeah.
And they were, covered. Bailey then hit those brutal headbutts. The announcer said that the day had started out at 94 degrees, and it's still around 86 to 87. For Canadians, you're talking about like the range of 30 to 34 out, which is – that's pretty hot, especially for this crowd that's been out there for hours.
And it's in the sun. There's not a lot of shade because in the field. And there's also – because in the woods, there's bugs.
Yeah.
A lot of bugs, like ticks and mosquitoes and things like that. So imagine being covered in blood – is not.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, for these fans, if they got sunburnt, but I don't know if that's if you would be complaining to the company about, hey, man, I got sunburnt at Tournament of Death.
I think.
Oh, really?
John, at one point did you see in this one of the matches, I forget which one it was, someone tees off on a guy with a light bulb and the light bulb, part of it shoots in the crowd and the announcers are like, oh, someone got a souvenir. Shards of glass. No, you're not complaining about a sunburn.
Both had been to the finals in the past. Neither had won. And Bailey hit a fisherman buster onto light tubes in the ring. Vortex then needed help lifting the table from the floor. Remember, he was coming back from that broken arm. I didn't even know if he had maybe had like nerve damage from earlier or something, because he just – it did appear he had much strength in his arm. He needed assistance just getting the table up. Two ladders get set up with the table in the ring. A log cabin is placed on the table. They go up the ladder, and it ends in a side Russian leg sweep as both equally go through the log cabin and table off the ladder, and we get this close-up of all the glass sticking out of the back. The announcers compare this to the car wreck, and this is where I just wrote, no, this is worse. Vortex breaks numerous light tubes over Bailey. He won't stop with them. Bailey finally comes back. He gets a giant stack of light tubes. He's attacking with them. They don't break, places it on top of Vortex, and Bailey goes to the top and hits a double foot stomp. Vortex kicks out of that. They're trading blows. They're trading headbutts. Fans are chanting for both individuals. And then Bailey kicks a light tube into the groin of Vortex, which was called a light tube vasectomy. Not doctor recommended. And I thought the announcer, and I apologize, I don't know which was which that stated this, but he just summed it up. This isn't entertainment. This is pure, horrific, violent sport. Yeah. Agreed. Vortex then crashed a log cabin over top Bailey on the turnbuckle, hit the Blue Moon Dragon off the top onto the light tubes, and Scotty Vortex wins the Tournament of Death at 14 minutes and 17 seconds. And I thought it was apropos that upon hitting this, blood landed on the camera lens to film the final pinfall.
Yeah.
That summed up this very well.
It did. Blood on the lens.
So Drake Younger and Danny Havoc come out to congratulate Vortex in the ring. The trophy is presented by DJ Hyde as Bailey is helped to the back and just looks a mess. Vortex addresses the crowd. He says he started watching CZW in his grandma's garage and dreamt of winning this tournament. He thanks the fans, thanks DJ Hyde, and we would get a post-match kind of segment backstage with Cult Fiction, but that concluded the in-ring portion of Tournament of Death.
Yeah, this is like, and as you say, like, are you shell-shocked by this point? And it's like, kind of. by the last match. And I think they do book them really well. They try and avoid, like, you know, too many people doing the same things. Like, not everyone leaves and goes into the crowd and things like that. And they save the ladders till the end. So you don't see ladders until this point. But, you know, it's just like watching these two people that have done just about everything to each other that can be done. You know, the main event was they were both great. They both worked incredibly hard. But by this point, I was a little worn out on the violence, which I didn't feel the same way this year when I saw it live.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was just differently booked. I guess it was differently booked. But, like, I think, you know, it's just that – how do you come back from that final match in the first round?
Yeah, that to me was – there's nothing more violent than the Kenzans.
No. And there's also – there's that match where Masada versus Vortex, and when he's doing that spot that you talked about where he just keeps dropping him on the cinder blocks.
Yep.
One of them's broken, and there's just like this jagged piece of concrete sticking up, and it's – I was just like, Masada, just kick that away. Just kick that away. You can just kick that with your foot, and it's just like never kicked away, and he keeps getting slammed on it.
It'd be like the announcer desk spot where you clear the monitors away.
Yeah. Yeah, just clear the broken cinder block before you throw them. When I – saw Masada wrestle this year, he was pile-drived onto a cinder block for the end of the match. And that's how it ended.
Not good.
He was out.
Wow. Well, when's that documentary going to be airing? And when?
It's out now.
It's out now?
It's out now.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it came out now. It came out 2 days ago now. Yes. Right?
You're in our time continuum,
Using our time continuum that we're
in. So this past Wednesday. Where can people go watch that again?
Vice.com.
Vice.com. All right. Graham is backstage with Cult Fiction, Bailey, Masada, and Brain Damage. He says they are still the dominating force and will not and won't take Bailey's apology. And as Bailey apologized for losing in the finals, Graham says he's important and shouldn't be put through this, in reference to the table spot and the barbed wire that he took. And you can see him, he's bleeding from the head, which he references many times in this promo. He says he takes the blame for their losses tonight and announces he is done with CZW. He has embarrassed his guys, and his guys are all trying to talk him out of this. They're saying it's not your fault. And he mocks Danny Havoc and constantly says, look at my head, look at my head, as his justification for leaving. He says Trent Acid is their newest member and says everyone loves Trent now and calls them the same people that killed Trent Acid, and now they're treating him like he's their best friend. I don't know all of the story behind this, like promo and stuff. I assume this was the end of Billy Graham.
So I was kind of wondering too, and I meant to check and see if he was around right afterwards, but it seems like a write-off. But what a weird write-off for him too, where he just cuts this promo.
Like, this felt like this was it for this Billy Graham character.
Yeah, and then it felt weird when he brought in the Trent Acid thing. And
was the end of the show. This was the final thing you see.
And you can see the thumbtacks in Billy Graham's head the whole time.
Right.
It's just like, yeah, like it felt like the end of it. Which led me to, has this guy shown up anywhere else? Have you ever seen this guy anywhere?
I've never seen him.
Wow.
But a good promo, great, I thought.
Yeah, like obviously some of the language is a little less PC than I would have liked. But like, you know, for a bad guy heel, he's playing that role of a cult leader. And like this guy feels creepy. And that's exactly what he was meant to feel like, I think.
So there you have it. That was the Tournament of Death. Damien, we got through it.
We got through it, John. Well, I am hats off to you, John. That was amazing. And once again, hearing you recap that, it's like seeing that your skill sets can be applied to an entire other thing.
Who would have thought?
You could start recapping car crashes. You can start recapping all sorts of other stuff now that you know that you can do.
We've opened up a wide world, Damien, thanks to your suggestion.
Well, that was next time I know – I got to make the other suggestion crazier. I got to pick, what would it be? TNA circa 2008 and then the Robbie Brookside documentary, because I don't think you'd pick TNA 2008.
Oh, that was a period. I mean, great talent at the time.
I know.
But probably a reverse battle royal or two in there. That
exactly.
That's tough.
That's one thing. I got to pick something that's going to make you pick that Robbie Brookside documentary eventually.
We will do Robbie Brookside. Do you have a rating for this event?
Yeah, like –
I don't know what the hell to judge this based upon. This was so unlike almost anything.
Well, like you said, it makes – you know, not that it makes other wrestling obsolete, but it makes other criteria that you judge wrestling on. You can't really judge it using the same criteria that you would judge, you know, a New Japan show or something like that on, even though some of this talent probably crosses over. I don't know, I'd say for a death match, this would be like a 9.
Wow, a 9.
Well, because like for if you're going like
– there was some like violent stuff. If you're yeah. if you're basing it on that curve, yeah, this was up there.
That's what I'm saying for like a death
stuff match. I had never seen before or want to see again.
And this is like really one of those ones that people keep coming back to when they talk about this style of wrestling as mm-hmm. being – you know, like you have – this is a rare moment where you have Nick Gage, you have Kobayashi – you have Drake Younger, you have Masada, and you have Danny Havoc. You've got all these big names, Brain Damage, and none these guys wouldn't all be around together again. So this is like a key show, I guess, in that world. And yeah, like I like, you know, if we're using that criteria, what's the most disturbing thing you've ever seen? And that's your high watermark for deathmatch. I'd say like an 8 or a 9 for this one for as a deathmatch. As a regular wrestling show, it's kind of hard.
I don't think you can compare this to yeah. a regular wrestling show. It's just too different to me.
It was funny going from one night I went to like a church basement type indie show, community center type indie show.
Yep.
With a lot of these deathmatch guys wrestling in it, but in a no blood, $200 fine if you bleed rule
right.
type thing. So it's like I saw Matt Trayvon, who's the CZW champion at the time, wrestling Kevin Sullivan. And I saw Eddie Kingston wrestle Shane Douglas.
Wow.
And but they're doing traditional match stuff, right? Like wrestling stuff. And then to see this the next day with a lot of the same talent doing this other type of wrestling style the next day, you realize that it's like two incredibly different worlds in the same universe.
All right. Well, that is going
what
to
what are you
going to
rate it, John?
Oh, I didn't even give my ranking. Jeez, I don't know. I mean, I'll go 7. I'll go okay. 7 out of 10, basing it on the criteria of a death match card.
I want to see what a John Pollock 9 or 10 out of 10 is then. It'd be one of those one of those Japanese death match matches where they throw the guy into the pit of piranhas.
You see, that to me wouldn't be a high ranking. Like, I'm not ranking this based on how violent it was.
Yeah,
if I'm just basing this on pure violence, yeah, it's probably a 25. But I can't watch that and say that it's... it's what entertains me with professional wrestling and hence the 7 out of 10 rating.
I thought, you know what? And also, I have so much respect for you for being that open-minded about this type of wrestling. Because when I was prepared for you to just crap on this thing the whole time. But I guess like...
No, I'm not. Listen, I don't want to be that guy that's just like, oh, this is everything that's wrong with wrestling. I mean, who am I to say that? There's people that watch this. There's a company that promotes this. These guys, I don't care what you say about them. It's just you're going out there. You're generating a reaction from people. And God bless them if this is what they want to do. I hope that every single performer on this show is healthy enough that they can go on and make millions of dollars in professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. But it's just I watch this and it's just to me, I can't just turn off the fact of what they're doing to their bodies and long-term effects. And when you see like a guy like JC Bailey, I just think that that's a heartbreaking story of 2 months after this tournament, this guy passes away. And head trauma was a massive reason.
Well, obviously this is the most extreme example of it, but just the thing with wrestling in general. I think there was a Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast not too long ago where he had someone on and they're trying to figure out how long they have left to live just based on
– well, that's frightening.
Yeah, like it, but you know, and that's – the reality of the life that they'd led, and it's a hard life, you know, like to suffer that kind of trauma. So yeah, I think that like that's the thing about wrestling. It's the unbelievable sacrifice that these performers put into it on every level for entertainment. Mm-hmm. Like there's nothing out there that requires that kind of level of, you know, health sacrifice, I don't think.
Yeah, I would encourage people, if you want to read about JC Bailey, in the obit in the Wrestling Observer back, this would have been, he passed away August of 2010, so the week after. There's a really interesting write-up just about his life and also comments from his father who promoted wrestling and talked about how, I mean, this was a guy who did struggle with drugs and his father was stating, you know, he loved doing this and wouldn't have changed any of that, but his cautionary tale for wrestlers was, let's cool it on the headshots. Mm-hmm. And that's coming from somebody that was involved with promoting, saw what his son did, encouraged his son to go in this direction, and saw, you know, the effect of head trauma. And, you know, it's a sad
end result for a pro wrestler, for JC Bailey, but I think it's one of those cautionary tales that I think if you're going to be doing this, there's no way to safeguard especially this kind of wrestling or any wrestling. There's going to be injuries, there's going to be damage, there's going to be wear and tear, and you can only do so much to protect yourself. But the head stuff is something you just – there has to be more of a, to me, concern about that.
I think in wrestling, I guess, is the forefront of people understanding of it. But I think it's going to change the way every sport is played eventually.
Yeah.
Head trauma.
Well, you're seeing it. I mean, last week when the Boston Globe had that story about Axel Rotten and Jordan Parsons, who is the first MMA fighter that they have now diagnosed with CTE after he died from a hit-and-run accident. I mean, you're starting to see it now. Balls Mahoney was the other one that I was blanking on there. Guys that – I think we're learning more and more about that, and a lot of these wrestlers and fighters alike realize that this is something that is a possibility in your future, and it's not something that's just you can keep ignoring. That is a real risk to all of this, no matter how safe you are.
Well, in Canada, like, think about hockey.
Sure.
I had a concussion playing hockey, and I was playing the next day. It's just – what happens, when you're a kid, and people should understand, obviously this is way more extreme than that, but I think it's going to change the way every sport is played eventually. And I think with deathmatch wrestling, you could probably cover up the headshots. Like, you don't have to do them. Like, that's not necessarily what people are I think in Japanese strong style wrestling, that's going to be a harder adjustment than deathmatch wrestling.
I mean, I will say this. I mean, there were a whole lot less, there were some, like the chair shots to the head. There weren't as many as you would expect on a 3-hour tournament of death show. Mm-hmm. They were still there, and there were those headbutts that are just sickening to me. But yeah, you're right. A lot of the key spots we've outlined on this show,
except for the main one.
Yeah. All right, that's going to wrap up the show. There is no feedback this week because we already went pretty long on this show. And Damien,
where are we at for the record, John? We're near our record.
Well, we didn't have way here for some other non sequiturs.
No,
we had a lot to cover today.
Yep. But were you worried when I was coming in that maybe something crazy was going to happen? Because every time I come in, it's just you and me.
I was ready. I was ready for it.
Story.
That's why I turned my phone off.
I know. That's why we got the most.
Who knows what's happened?
I know. Same here. I don't know. Kids could have had diarrhea incidences. I don't know.
So what's happening in your world besides the Vice documentary, which vice.com is where you can go watch your documentary on Tournament of Death.
On the TOD.
What synergy this podcast
Thanks
has provided.
Thanks to John Pollock's accidental synergy.
And plug your many podcasts now, your non-law related podcasts.
I do a podcast called Turned Out of Punk. And for anyone here, strongly recommended the MVP episode and the MVP Zach Blair episode. And of course, John Pollock's favorite, the Robbie Brookside episode, of course.
Yes, and the Greg Benedetto episode.
And the Greg Benedetto episode as well.
A great roundtable discussion.
Yeah,
about the state of punk.
Yeah, I think that hopefully this show is, if you enjoy punk music, like, it's totally ripped off Colt Cabana's format. Like, I listened to Live Audio Wrestling and Colt and was like, I think I can figure a way to make this my own.
There you go.
So I sit down and talk to people about how they got into punk music and. From all manner of situations in life. I had Craig Ferguson on.
Yes, I saw that. You've had Anthony Bourdain on?
Yeah, but Craig Ferguson played in Nico from the Velvet Underground's band.
Oh, of course I knew that.
I did not, John. That's why.
You should have asked me.
You're the king of all wrestling and the king of all music.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. then I've got a couple other podcasts on that feed as well that you can check out. But Turned Out of Punk is kind of the name of the channel. And then I play in a band.
Yeah.
We're in England right now, so come out and see me. And also, since I'm here, finally, I'm allowed back on Live Audio Wrestling. I can tell you, John, I have a lot of people that wanted me to say hello. And if Wei was here, I'd give him the hug that someone told me to give him. But I can give you the high five I was told to give you.
Oh, wow. Well, that was very kind. Thank you to whoever that was.
People come out all the time and bring up – I had a guy come up to me when we played Chicago. Or was it Chicago or Denver? And he's like, I flew to see you. Because I figure this is as close as I'll get to talking to John and Wei.
Oh, please.
I swear to – my hand on the Tournament of Death Bible.
Wow. Well, that's got to be taken as legitimate, though.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the – you guys – you got to tour this, John.
Are you going to be gone during Halloween?
I'm coming back just in time for Halloween.
Oh, that's good.
I'm coming just in time for us to do our group costume together.
What are your kids going out as?
Iron Man.
Okay.
A zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe an otter.
An otter.
You see otter?
Oh, okay.
Maybe a tiger. I can't remember what we have Camden the baby in. He didn't get to choose. The other two chose.
Yeah, I would figure it's kind of bestowed upon them.
Yeah, like, you know, I wanted to take him out as Mick Foley, but Lauren said no.
I would say no as well.
Oh.
Come on. Iron Man's pretty popular.
Iron Man. No, this is my baby. The baby.
Oh, the baby. Well, I mean, a Mick Foley outfit. I mean, you get a mask and a flannel jacket and you're good to go. That mask would be annoying for a little baby, though.
Just in a goatee.
All right.
Needs like a little painted on goatee.
Yeah, the baby doesn't shave that morning, maybe.
No, just lets it grow in.
You've got the Mick Foley beard.
He's got a bigger beard now, eh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Maybe I should say he has a Damien Abraham beard.
I was just on tour with this band called the Nightbirds. We went on tour with the Descendants, big wrestling fans. Some of them even listen to this podcast. Hello, Nightbirds.
Hey, Descendants.
Not the Descendants. But the Nightbirds.
Oh, the Nightbirds. Yeah. Okay.
Nightbirds also have a song about Mick Foley that Mick Foley, I don't know if he appears on the record, but he certainly has talked about.
Oh, wow.
A tribute song to him.
Is this an easily accessible song?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're on Fat Records. They're a popularish punk band.
Well, let's go out with it.
Okay. Mick Foley tribute by the Nightbirds.
Okay. There we go. I hope they won't get upset at us using a portion of their song.
I can call them. Don't worry. I can pave the way.
Man, you should be my lawyer. Done. All right, folks. That is going to do it for us. And we're back, everyone. We have an update. Damien Abraham, all of a sudden, just disappeared into thin air from this studio and is now in England.
Yes.
How did you end up there, Damien? This is some creepy stuff.
The power of Robbie Brookside compelled me, John, and I just had to – we talked about him so much the other day that I had to just hop on a plane and come over to his homeland. And I actually went to the pub where his career was ended by a bunch of Lucha Libre masked wrestling hardcore fans. So
this is a very powerful time machine that you got into to just take you both in time and in distance all the way overseas.
Yes.
Unfortunately, you also put your Vice documentary into that time machine and you have messed it all up. So it didn't air this past week. It's going to be airing at a later date. How did you mess this up?
I, unfortunately, John, created a time paradox when I hopped into the time machine and thus have lost the documentary. But it is going to be coming out, from what I understand, from what the scientists tell me, in the first or second week of November. But I will definitely – but obviously my friend, John Pollock, know first.
Well, I hope so. I mean, Christ, we couldn't have mentioned it more times
in
this last 2 hours here, Damien. But second or first week of November, at Vice.com, they will get to see this Tournament of Death documentary.
Yes, it's been delayed only to make it better, I've been told. Like, people are very excited about it, and just at the company, I mean, and we're just pulling it to make some final tweaks before it comes out, and I will make sure you're the first one to see the trailer, John.
So this isn't going to be like a promised sit-down interview with a legendary announcer. It's just a temporary delay,
yes.
Correct?
Yes. I know these time paradoxes are created from time to time at Vice, but this one is just a temporary one. Believe me, this is too good to keep lost forever.
All right. And I have decided over the past couple of minutes while I've been sitting here by myself wondering where Damien went that we will be back in 2 weeks with a new review away. It's going to be out Friday, November the 11th, and it is going to be a big review. It is going to be a review of this past year's PWG Battle of Los Angeles.
Yes!
All three nights will be reviewed. So you will want to check that out Friday, November the 11th. And now
we are going to end the show
with Damien's musical selection that we were just about to get to when all of a sudden, poof, he just vanished from Toronto. Enjoy the rest of the tour, Damien.
Thank you, John. And enjoy the Nightbirds and their song about Mick Foley.
A perfect reminder. All right. We will chat with you next time.